Time to take you home on a Monday with the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy, and we've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Big hour on the way. Don Fisher will be joining us coming up at about 5:20. It's our 15 Minutes with Fish, presented by Cruzy Automotive Service. And also, we've got the Parkview Sports Medicine text line open at 46862. Colts. Short week as they get prepared for the Denver Broncos. That'll be a Thursday night game. I wonder if everybody has figured out how to watch it by now, because it is, again, an Amazon broadcast. So if you haven't figured it out, you might have to go to a local establishment to watch this one coming up on Thursday night. But the Colts Broncos, you know, it's two teams that probably at this point in the season have underperformed, both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Denver definitely not living up to expectations either with Russell Wilson.
No, Denver's 2-2, but there's a lot of questions about Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah.
About Russell Wilson and his play.
Yeah.
And of course, the Denver Broncos lost against the Raiders yesterday.
Yep.
To fall to 2-2, and now they've got the Colts coming to the Mile High City on Thursday night. I don't know. This might end up being a defensive battle. The Colts just have to make sure Russell Wilson doesn't beat them deep, because that's where Russell Wilson's strength is. But they also have to contain him and not let him run. I mean, you know, it's one of those guys that you feel like maybe you've got to have that extra couple of days of practice to prepare for, because the things he does with the rollout, the bootleg, being able to scramble. But and especially since Shaquille Leonard is not going to be available. He is out, as is Tyquan Lewis, both of them dealing with concussions, so we already know that. And we don't know the status of Jonathan Taylor. Now, a lot's been made about Nyheim Hines and trying to get him more involved. Certainly in the running game, Nyheim Hines hasn't done a whole lot. In fact, in yesterday's game, Nyheim Hines had one carry for 0 yards.
Not ideal.
No production whatsoever in the running game. But where he has been productive is in the passing game. Now, not so much yesterday, a couple of catches, 3 yards. But Tennessee did something against him that that I thought the announcers did a really good job. Adam Amin, who I think is a terrific broadcaster, a guy that's been on our show numerous times, he brought up the fact that Tennessee was using a nickel corner to match up man-to-man against Hines. So even though he was coming out of the backfield, they were not letting Hines get matched up against the linebacker. Well, I thought, okay, the Colts need to make that adjustment then. And what you've got to do is line up with 3 or 4 wide, put Hines as the back in the backfield, and then take him out of the backfield, put him into motion, and maybe motion him all the way to the sideline where he's the outside receiver. That could certainly put the defense under some pressure as far as how they rotate their coverages. You know, I would love to see, Paris Campbell or Pierce, or even one of those tight ends matched up against the linebacker. Because, man, those tight ends, Mo Alie-Cox and Jelani Woods, they are men amongst boys. They are big bodies, big targets for Matt Ryan. But I think you've got to do something to confuse the defense and maybe confuse the coverages. If you're trying to set up a nickel, maybe you rotate him out of the backfield, move him out to a true wide receiver spot out of the backfield. Maybe you run with an empty backfield. Now you could say, oh, they're set up for the blitz. But if you've got a good blitz read by your tight ends, by your linebackers, or by your wide receivers, that shouldn't worry you. In fact, you should invite it. But right now, the Colts are getting burned by the blitz. I thought they did a better job yesterday, but still, this Colts offensive line, which was supposed to be, in fact, I think they even mentioned it on yesterday's broadcast, it's, you know, among the elite in the NFL. That is all reputation. It's based on no fact whatsoever. The Colts had a pretty good offensive line about 3 years ago. You know, when you inserted Quentin Nelson.
Yeah.
And you had Costanzo and Kelly was already there.
And they've just kind of ran with that narrative.
Basically. Yeah, that instead of actually looking at what this offensive line has done, and you look at Jonathan Taylor's stats from a year ago, and you could say, oh, it's because of the offensive line. No, I think what we're seeing, it's because of Jonathan Taylor. Because when Nyheim Hines gets carries, he doesn't have the same kind of success. The offensive line is an issue. Matt Pryor, he's an issue at left tackle. In fact, right guard is such an issue right now after Mark Lewinsky was allowed to leave and signed with the New York Giants that right guard ended up being replaced. Danny Pinter, who's been the starter for the Colts through the first three games, lost his starting job, and they went with Will Fries at right guard. So clearly the coaching staff realizes offensive line's an issue or you don't start making personnel changes. And that offensive line's got to play better. But the other thing is the Colts scheme is really poor. They are trusting zone blocking principles. They're just taking the man helmet to helmet across from him. And when the Colts are at their best, because they've got guards that are mobile, that can move, especially Quentin Nelson, good athletic guard, use him with trap blocking, with, you know, pulling him. Do something to mix it up a little bit and allow the offensive line to get some leverage on some guys. Because right now what's happening when they're trying to go straight forward and run block, they're not getting any kind of push out of that offensive line. There's just nothing there for Jonathan Taylor to really run through. Occasionally, he kind of slips through a little bit of a gap and, you know, gets a 5-6 yard carry. But overall, the Colts aren't being real creative because they believe they've got an elite offensive line and they don't have to be cute and creative, that they can just overpower you. And at this point, we've got to really look in the mirror and say, you know what? Our offensive line is not everything that everybody says it is. Colts have problems with their offensive line.
Yeah, really, yeah.
Of course, Jonathan Taylor, possible high ankle sprain. Don't know if he's going to go.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice to have Philip Lindsay this week, former Denver Bronco, go against his former team?
Wouldn't that be nice? I was just going to say I'm really worried looking ahead to this Thursday's game. I think it could be a total recipe for disaster for another loss.
And honestly, the Colts really – you know, this is another one where you start to think, and they just can't afford more losses. They've got to come out strong. They can't. I mean, as Frank Reich said at the press conference after the game,
right,
the list pretty much the same. Got to get a better start. Got to force some turnovers. Got to win the turnover battle. Can't turn the ball over. Matt Ryan, I don't care what you do. Stick them, whatever you've got to do. You got to hold on to the football. You cannot keep fumbling the football. 9 fumbles in 4 weeks, completely inexcusable. You've got to hang on to the ball. You've got to protect it because the offense is struggling enough even when you don't turn it over. You can't add to it by just giving it away. And Matt Ryan, too often, giving it away. Interceptions, fumbles. And, you know, the Colts have had some moments where they've looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Ryan has had moments where he's looked really good. But then he counters that with stretches where he looks really bad. And I thought yesterday you saw some progress with the tight ends again. Mo Alie-Cox had a big day. Jelani Woods had the big day against Kansas City. Alec Pierce, I thought it was a huge game for him yesterday because the Colts need a number two receiver. They don't really have those playmakers that can burn you down the field. And so, you know, you've got to be able to get man-to-man coverage. And did you remember that ball that Matt Ryan, you didn't see it, but you were in Detroit. Matt Ryan underthrew a deep ball, and Pierce was able to read it, react to it, and make the catch. But the point is, Pierce has to win those one-on-one battles and because he's going to be in one-on-one situations. And Michael Pittman Jr. is going to get double-teamed. In other words, if there's going to be a deep safety, he's going to rotate to Pittman's side, and you may end up with opportunities, even though Pierce isn't known as a true burner, as a true vertical threat. He's no Tyreek Hill. He's no Jalen Waddle. But if you get him in man-to-man, you've got to trust him to make plays on those 50-50 balls, and yesterday he did. So I think there's still some things the Colts can do. They just have to focus more on those and not as much on the things they can't do, which number one is straight push, you know, and try to go right straight at him with the run, with the, you know, the run off the guard, because that doesn't seem to go anywhere. And the Colts, too many times on the first down, they give it to Jonathan Taylor. He gains 1 or 2 yards. Now, all of a sudden, you've got 2nd and 9, 2nd and 8. Okay, Colts need to be in 2nd and 4 situations much more often. First down, they've got to mix it up more. They can't run it as heavy as they have chosen to run it on first down because they're not consistent enough with 5 and 6 yard carries. And I don't mind being committed to the run and still mixing it in. I don't want to go exclusively to the pass, but I also don't think that you can run it on 2/3 or 3/4 of your first downs and put yourself into 2nd and 8, 2nd and 9 situations that often. In fact, that's what the Colts were able to do against Tennessee. They were able to stuff Derrick Henry in that second half, force Tennessee into 2nd and 8, 2nd and 9, get an incompletion out of Tannehill, and then they pinned the ears back, went after Tannehill, and came up with the coverage to get Tennessee off the field. And I thought the defense played really well the second half. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. I think this defense can still be a really good defense. I don't know. My biggest concern is at the line of scrimmage being overpowered a little bit. I think they still have to be more consistent with getting pressure on the quarterback, but I thought they showed progress in that yesterday. Although Tennessee's offensive line, what, has a rookie at one tackle, has a backup at the other tackle, so it's not exactly an elite offensive line. Colts should have dominated between the two offensive lines, and instead you've got Derrick Henry rushing for 114 yards and Jonathan Taylor rushing for 42. And in fact, they had about the same number of carries. Taylor had 20, and Derrick Henry had 22 carries, so almost identical numbers. But just how bad has it been for the Colts offense? Let me give you some numbers. First of all, they are the worst in the league, or near the worst, in turnovers, in sacks allowed, and in scoring the fewest points. They're averaging like 14 points per game. They have not yet exceeded 20 points in any of their first four contests.
Yeah, that's pretty dismal.
They might be the only team in the league that hasn't scored over 20 in at least one of their four games.
Hard to believe. Is it hard to believe, though?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's hard to believe. We expected a little bit more from this Colts offense. Matt Ryan, if you look at the numbers, not horrible yesterday. 27 of 37, 356 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. Mm-hmm. That just shows you how big the fumbles are.
Absolutely.
He had a fumble, and Jonathan Taylor had that fumble with 8 minutes left.
And you've talked about the fumbles before when you've mentioned about how Matt Ryan does his drop back.
Momentum killers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when he hangs in the pocket, it seems like he holds the ball low so you can actually strip him or pull the ball down and out of his hand. And he's got to do a better job of protecting it and holding on to it.
Absolutely.
And if he's going to take a sack, he's going to take a sack. But don't take a sack, give the ball up. That's the absolute worst thing. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. You look at the Broncos and a lot of questions about the Broncos coach, Nathaniel Hackett. Now, Hackett was actually hired by the Broncos in what I thought appeared as a lure. It was almost like they were baiting Aaron Rodgers to come to Denver.
Right, right.
Because Nathaniel Hackett was the offensive coach for Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay.
Yeah.
And it looked like Denver wanted him as quarterback, and maybe he wanted to be in Denver. And I thought, okay, they've hired the coach to lure the quarterback. And then Aaron Rodgers doesn't end up being with Nathaniel Hackett. Now you wonder if Nathaniel Hackett is a little bit of a Bill Belichick, where he's much better when he's partnered with that guy than when he's partnered with this guy.
Maybe, yeah. It might just be he was better with having Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers kind of makes a coach look good at times, right?
Yeah.
And that might be the situation for Nathaniel Hackett. In fact, we were talking earlier about college football in St. Francis. They went up to Siena Heights over the weekend, and the Cougars end up falling, talking about lack of offense, 13-10. We heard Coach talk last week that the competition for quarterback was being opened up, but it was Heath Simmons that was the starter for the Cougars, and we'll have to get Coach's take on this on Wednesday because Simmons completed less than 50% of his passes, just 20 of 41 for 182 yards. a touchdown and a pick in a 13-10 St. Francis Cougars loss to Siena Heights. Cougars were down 13-3 in the fourth quarter and scored to make it a three-point game, but could come no closer. In fact, I think if I recall, I was trying to follow this game. I think the Cougars may have had like a 50-some yard field goal try to maybe get the game tied at the end of regulation. I think it was blocked because Jack James has a terrific leg for the St. Francis Cougars. All right, let's go ahead and check in before we get to Don Fisher with today's top headlines.
All right, in today's top headlines, the Patriots are down to their third-string quarterback, Bailey Zapp. Yes, second-string quarterback Brian Hoyer suffered a head injury and was ruled out early in the game. Zapp was selected with the number 137th pick in the 2022 NFL Draft out of Western Kentucky.
Yeah, just some depth. And, of course, the Hoosiers played against Zapp last year. And he did okay last night. I didn't think he did horrible.
The game was closer than I thought it would be.
And it seems like that's always the case with New England.
Yeah.
You do have to give them credit that when they put in rookie inexperienced quarterbacks, whether it's Jacoby Brissett, whether it's Mac Jones, that they seem to go out there and usually perform pretty well. And the one who performed pretty well above all of them, Tom Brady, who is still performing pretty well.
White Sox manager Tony La Russa is stepping down as manager due to health concerns that kept him out of the dugout for the final 5 weeks of the season. He announced in a statement just today.
Well, it's been reported for some time. It may have been an official statement today.
It's official now, yes.
But it has been reported for a few days that Tony La Russa was not going to be returning to the White Sox. And I think most White Sox fans not too disappointed. The hope of bringing back White Sox magic from like the 1980s with La Russa,
it just wasn't there.
Didn't happen.
And after 4 weeks, the Philadelphia Eagles remain the lone unbeaten team in the NFL, while the Houston Texans are the only team without a win.
There you go. There are your top sports headlines with Adam Lundy. Coming up next, we talk to Don Fisher, voice of the Indiana Hoosiers. We'll talk everything Indiana football with the Fish. Coming up next on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy. Coming up tonight, we've got Monday Night Football. Of course, the Los Angeles Rams taking on the San Francisco 49ers. Coverage begins later tonight right here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. You know what? I got to be honest. Still feeling the bite out of how poorly the Colts again started that game yesterday. Just a rough first half. Even though this team shows signs of what they can be, there's not enough consistency. Team doesn't score enough points. Four games in, they've yet to top 20 points in a single game. That's on Matt Ryan. That's on Frank Reich. You've got to be able to somehow score points. And you can't just, when the other team goes over 20, say that's over for today. And that's basically what the Colts are right now, an offense that cannot put enough points on the board. So we'll see what happens. Colts heading to Denver on the short week, and that will be on Thursday night. Of course, all the coverage here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Well, right now we are joined by the Hall of Fame voice of the Indiana Hoosiers. It's our 15 Minutes with Fish, presented by Cruzy Automotive Service. Well, Don, we thought that maybe this was going to be one of those games that if the Hoosiers were going to have aspirations to make a bowl this year, that this was one that was there basically set up on the table for them. Going to Nebraska, a team that's under an interim coach, and unfortunately things just didn't go the way the Hoosiers hoped.
No, they did not. They started out poorly, obviously 1-2-3 and out in the first series, and then punted the ball away, and Nebraska went down in three plays and scored a touchdown, and Indiana was in the same boat that they've been all year long, playing from behind. And it continued that way throughout the first half until in the second quarter, the offense found its legs a little bit, thanks to a couple of big plays by a kid named Jalen Lucas, a true freshman, who came in and had a 34-yard run that helped set up a touchdown. And Indiana was able to tie the ball game at halftime 21-all, going into the locker room with a lot of momentum, you would think. They had to kick off to start the second half, and Indiana's offense then laid an egg the rest of the day. They just couldn't move the football, had 83 yards of offense in the second half. They had just 3 first downs. They were 1 of 8 in third down conversions in that second half as well. And it was just a poor performance from the offense that continues to struggle, especially in the sense of protecting the quarterback. Number one, they had 3 sacks on Connor Bazelak once again in this ball game. He got hit a bunch of times. He had to get rid of the ball a bunch because of the pressure that was coming to him. And they couldn't run the ball effectively once again. So, it becomes an offensive line issue that continues to haunt this football team. At least they did get Zach Carpenter, their starting center back, but because he was unable to, they had to have a cast, or not a cast necessarily, but some kind of a wrap around his snapping hand. They put him at left guard and put Mike Kadick, who was the left guard, back at center for the first time this year. So it looked like they had the strongest 5 on the football field from an offensive line perspective. But it just didn't protect well enough again, and there was just too much pressure coming on Bazelak. He was 50% in the ball game percentage completion-wise, which is just not good enough. And 2 wide receivers didn't play. Cam Camper, your leading receiver on your football team and one of the leading receivers, not just in the Big Ten but in the country, along with the DJ Matthews, who's your most dynamic receiver offensively, and he was not able to play because he was injured last week and was not available for this ball game either. Camper has a non-COVID-related illness of some kind. We hope it was just a short-lived problem, and he'll be back next week. But again, we don't know that here this early in the week. So at this juncture, it's a football team that, in my opinion, is in real trouble if they can't find some of the solutions to the problems that they're dealing with.
Well, we should have known it was going to be perhaps a long night before the first play was even snapped. I don't know that I've ever seen a team come out after a touchback, line up, and have to call a timeout before they even run their first play.
Yeah, I know. Yep, that was to avoid a penalty. And here's the other thing about that. They had more penalties in this ball game than they've had in any game this season. Indiana had 11 in this contest, and they played a big role in why Indiana couldn't move the football consistently. And you know, when you're dealing with some issues from a personnel standpoint, that's a big factor. But then you add to the problem with penalties on top of that, it's a solution for getting beat badly, which in this case I think Indiana was beat pretty badly.
Well, and Nebraska actually didn't exactly avoid the penalty flags either. No. Man, there were a lot of them flying that night.
Yes, they should have thrown their flags up to my booth because I was blowing my nose the entire day because of the cold that I had for the last few days. And certainly I could have used those flags on Saturday. But nevertheless, you're right. Nebraska also got penalized a bunch and gave Indiana opportunities because of those penalties. But Indiana just not able to take advantage of it throughout the ball game. And I think probably the thing that bugs me the most in this contest was a personnel decision for Indiana. Jalen Lucas, a true freshman, mm-hmm. who has shown some very dynamic abilities on the football field with the ball in his hands, came in and helped rally Indiana to a touchdown late in the first half, ran 3 times. One of those was a 34-yard run to set up a touchdown. And then we never saw him again on the football field with the exception of kickoff returns, which their kicker was good enough to kick it away from this guy most of the night. And so he never got another chance to touch the football. And when you're missing 2 of your most dynamic players on offense in Camper and Matthews, why you wouldn't have this kid in the ball game? Because he's capable of catching the ball and running the football. He's listed as a running back, but he has every ability to catch the football and then make something happen with it. And they never used him at one time in the second half when it wasn't a kickoff return. And I just don't understand that.
Yeah, in fact, in the notes I took preparing to talk to you today, I put number 12 is an absolute stud playmaker, breaking ankles. And I said, why did they abandon the running game? And I felt like, you know, they found something that maybe could work with all of the problems they've got, offensive line, wide receiver, and then they kind of abandoned away from it. And everybody's putting up points against this Nebraska defense. You've got to find a way to score.
That's exactly right. I mean, Nebraska was averaging giving up 500-plus yards a game going into this contest. I mean, there's got to be a way that you can put somebody out there to get it done. And unfortunately, the biggest problem with this football team is the offensive line. There's just no question about it. They struggle to open holes for their running backs, and they struggle big time to block the quarterback. I mean, Connor Bazelak was 50% of this game on his percentage of completions. He was chased the entire ball game. He had to get rid of it a number of times just because of the pressure. Just throw it away many times in this contest. Your completion percentage is going to be horrible when you have to do that. And he got hit a bunch again. So, look, this is a football team. If they don't get their offensive line problems fixed, which is going to be difficult, because they did play Zach Carpenter in this game. Carpenter, their starting center in the first three ball games of the season, didn't play last week, and he did 2 weeks in a row. And he did play in this ball game, but he played at left guard. They moved the left guard, Mike Kadick, into that center position. And then Carpenter played that left guard spot. They tried to fix some of their problems personnel-wise with that combination changing a little bit, but it just didn't work. And honestly, right now, it's an offensive line issue that hasn't been fixed for a couple of years, and I still think it's the biggest problem they have in this football team.
Because of political correctness, I'm not exactly sure how I can describe what's ahead of the Hoosiers coming up on Saturday, because they get a national television audience to show the world exactly where this football program is at, and they get to do it against one of the top four teams in the country. Michigan comes calling on Bloomington. I mean, great atmosphere, but my gut tells me, Don, not much of a football game.
No. I mean, if you judge everything by what we've seen so far and what we've seen out of Michigan thus far, this will be no contest. The one thing I will say, in recent years, Indiana generally has played Michigan pretty tough. But they have found a quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. They think that they've got that guy in a position now that he should be the number one guy, because they were using two entering the season. And he looks dynamic, because he not only can throw it effectively, he's a terrific runner when he's got the ball in his hands as well and has to run. And I don't think there's any question Indiana finds itself in a world of hurt if Michigan plays anywhere close to their capability, because they are a powerful football team. They always have terrific talent. They've got players, great skill position players. And like I said, they found their quarterback here in McCarthy, and he looks to be dynamic at times. It's going to be a real challenge for this Indiana football team to put their best foot forward, number one. And if they don't, it'll be no contest. So obviously, hopefully we can get Cam Camper and DJ Matthews back this week, and they start utilizing Jalen Lucas a lot more. That question will be asked, I guarantee, in the press conference this week with Tom Allen. And if it's not, we'll ask it on Wednesday night's talk show, because I think Lucas is a guy that can make a difference out there if he's given that opportunity.
Shocker in the Big Ten, Paul Chryst out at Wisconsin. I mean, I wasn't surprised that he would be on the hot seat and that there would be some consideration after the season's over. But to have it happen immediately following a loss to the former coach who's now at Illinois, I just thought it was a pretty brash and quick, spontaneous move by Wisconsin to remove Paul Chryst.
I can't disagree. I was stunned by that, because usually Wisconsin doesn't pull the rug out from under somebody like that. He's been there, I think, what, 8 years, and done a really good job most of the seasons. Obviously, they struggled with a little bit the COVID year of 2020. I thought they came back and had a decent year last year. But I just don't get it. But coaches don't get a lot of rope these years. They don't give them a lot of rope to hang themselves with. I think he's a good football coach, and I guarantee you he'll land a job very quickly. But at the same time, it's become the law of the land. If you don't win, you get let go. And honestly, Indiana finds, I mean, Tom Allen's in the same kind of position right now. I mean, look what's happening with this team. They struggled and have done so after two really good seasons, the 8-4 year leading up to COVID year, 6-2, and then the expectations of last year met with 2-10 year, and now this year starting out 3-0, and now they're 3-2. I don't think Indiana will pull the trigger on Tom Allen before the season ends, if, in fact, they do at all. But at the same time, this is a football program right now that appears to be struggling mightily, and they've got to get things turned around here if you're going to see the kind of football that you're hoping to see. I'm not putting Tom Allen in the hot seat here by any stretch of the imagination, but at the same time, you can read the tea leaves, if you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely. And Don, to continue my pattern of always being a week behind, of course, last week I congratulated you on the Indiana University Hall of Fame, so I guess this week I owe you a happy birthday.
Well, I keep trying to hope that people forget that it's my birthday. So, you know, how happy can that be?
Yeah, well, congratulations. It's better than the alternative. I will say that.
You're right. You're right.
All right. Thanks, Don. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Brett.
Yep. This is Don Fisher joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Of course, Don Fisher and our 15 Minutes with Fish, always presented by Cruzy Automotive Services. We've got to take a break, and we will come back. Plenty more on the Sports Rush next on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
We'll be there for all the coverage of Mastodons basketball right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Saw this. I thought this was interesting. Rolling Stone apparently just put out a list that ranked all-time TV shows. Do you want to take a stab at it, Adam? What was the number one all-time greatest show, according to Rolling Stone?
Was it Gilligan's Island?
No, it was not Gilligan's Island. It was The Sopranos.
Oh, there we go.
With was that an HBO show? That was HBO, right?
I couldn't tell you. I actually haven't seen The Sopranos.
Really?
No.
Would not have been listed among my all-time shows, but you know, I could go through my lifetime and think of all the shows that like were must watch for me throughout like my teenage years and then my college years. And, you know, actually what's kind of funny is when I was in college, it was kind of the height and the heyday of David Letterman.
That's a classic one.
And so that was really big when I was in college. Everybody had to watch the stupid pet tricks and everything else. And so we all stayed up late to watch David Letterman pretty much every night. But I would think if I thought my lifetime, and I'm probably missing a good half dozen shows, but Seinfeld is one that really stuck with me.
That's a good one. That's a classic.
I think because of my age when it was on, you know, I was in, what, my 30s? And so I kind of could relate to them with what they were going through. But I don't think Sopranos, right?
Sopranos.
I don't think that would be my number one. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. What would be your number one all-time greatest TV show?
All-time favorite, 46862.
Now, what is yours?
I don't know. I really liked...
You haven't watched it yet. You're still too young.
I guess so. Back in the day, I really liked Avatar The Last Airbender as a kid. That's a classic kid show, but it's also good for adults too. I really liked Breaking Bad. That was a great series. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to pick a favorite, isn't it?
See, I've never streamed. So all the streaming shows that have been popular over the last decade, or well, what is it? Probably close to a decade now for streaming.
First listener weighing in with The Office.
That's a good one. That's a popular one.
I also really like Parks and Recreation, you know, because it also has the Indiana tie-in.
That's not a branch off The Office. It's its own show,
but it's the same mockumentary style type deal. I liked it.
The way it's shot, the way it's acted, it very much the same thing.
Yes. Yep. We actually just got another vote for The Office. So wow. The Office, very popular in Fort Wayne. Wow. And we got one for the Andy Griffith Show.
Wow. Now there's somebody who's been around a while.
Yeah. With the whistling theme song, right?
Well, I'm not going to try that.
All right.
But yeah, the whistling theme song. You'll have to look it up. I'm sure there's something you can watch on YouTube.
Oh, I'm sure. Because I've never seen it. I know the theme song.
Do you know Ron Howard, the director?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know of him as an actor?
No.
See, it's like John Madden.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people your age know John Madden.
From the video game.
The video game guy,
and
right?
Not the coach.
But not the coach.
The player, yeah.
I mean, some might not even know John Madden, the TV broadcaster.
Yeah. Another listener weighing in with MASH.
Yeah.
We're getting the old school ones.
That's some old school.
Yeah.
Because MASH was, when was that? I'm trying to think when because it was a big deal. The finale of MASH, we had MASH parties. That was really, to me, the first series that had this big buildup toward the finale was MASH.
Yeah, so it aired from 72 to 83, actually, so long run.
Okay,
there.
Because I was thinking that it was, there was like a party, and I would have been in college, so we probably had the MASH finale party. Because, you know, when we were in college, we would make any excuse possible.
To party.
Yeah, we would be like, we're going to party the local news tonight.
Oh, yeah.
The 6 o'clock news. We're going to throw a local news party. Yeah, MASH. Gosh, that was 73 to
81. Yeah, 73 to, or no, let me.
72 to 83.
72 to 83.
There you go.
11 years.
Wow.
We've got some more weighing in, it looks like. We've got SNL, someone weighing in Saturday Night Live.
Now, you see, if you pick Saturday Night Live, you've got to pick a cast.
Sure.
Because did you see Saturday Night? It was the season premiere.
I didn't.
They've got a whole new cast. They've got like four or five people from previous that are gone. Mm-hmm. But they opened, their dry open was Peyton and Eli.
Oh,
Doing their analysis on the new characters or the new actors that have joined the cast. And they were like doing breakdowns about all the rookie mistakes and everything.
That's pretty funny. Some more listeners weighing in. Sons of Anarchy is one we've gotten, which is, I believe, about the biker gangs.
Is that a stream?
Maybe HBO, maybe Showtime. I haven't seen it either.
I haven't.
ER. Is another one we've gotten. Someone said
that's an interesting. Oh, I got to tell you an ER story that I haven't told you,
sure.
And maybe it's first time for some of the listeners. My wife's sister lives in Laguna Beach, California.
Mm-hmm.
Now Laguna Beach is in Orange County. It is just south of the LA Metro. Beautiful, beautiful area. But they had twins. Now, I can tell you it's been like 21 or 22 years ago now, but they had twins and she took them to the grocery store and a lady stopped her in the grocery store looking at the babies and said, I know this is probably a little alarming and unnerving to you, but I want your kids. You know, it was a talent scout and they were looking for babies to star in a TV drama. And that's all she knew at that point, right?
Yeah.
And she was sent to this audition with these kids and somehow she showed up. But Juliana Margulies and George Clooney from ER had a baby. And the baby in the series ER is my wife's sister's twin girls.
Very cool.
And they had to add twins because of the schedule and stuff.
Yeah.
And the other thing is they also wanted different personalities. Like they wanted one that was fussy and one that was quiet because certain scenes required for the baby to be making noise or crying. And so they would use the fussy one. And then the other one, which was quiet, would get the scenes where she just was holding the baby and there was, you know, they were having other dialogue. So, yeah.
Cool connection there.
Yeah, I think they got a nice, handsome check for that, too.
Very cool. A couple more listeners weighing in. Someone said MASH lasted longer than the Korean War.
Yeah, really?
Yes, it did. And someone also said The Waltons holds the most awards.
Boy, we're going old.
I guess we are.
I said Seinfeld, and I always think of myself as the old guy. That's the most current show. Well, Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, Sons of Anarchy. ER is.
ER goes back to the 80s.
Goes back then, too. Okay.
Well, let me think. Because they were in the last season of ER.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, I believe, seniors in college right now.
Yeah, so.
22 years ago, so. 90s. It would have been like the 90s for ER. Would have ended like 99 or 2000 or something.
There you go.
Because I know they've been in college for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's kind of interesting. But the Rolling Stone says it's the Sopranos. We'll take a break. We'll come back. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Someone texted us on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Eberflus and Sirianni, 7-1. Colts, 1-2-1. Only problem with that is Eberflus and Sirianni are 6-2. Yes, Sirianni is 4-0 with the Eagles, former Colts offensive coordinator, and Matt Eberflus, is now 2-2 with the Chicago Bears, and the Colts 1-2-1 following the loss to Tennessee, which really hurts. If it comes down to tiebreakers, the Colts not in a good position. Three games into a six-game divisional schedule, and the Colts have yet to get a divisional win. I don't think I got any more on the shows. Great list, though, from the listeners.
Yeah, we appreciate everybody texting on our text line with their favorite TV shows.
Monday Night Football tonight, Rams and the San Francisco 49ers. Your coverage begins with Westwood One at 7:30 right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Thanks, as always, to Don Fisher, the legendary Hall of Fame voice of the Indiana Hoosiers. We're back tomorrow. Mike New, Ball State, he'll join us on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.